This is MGIF, a travelling podcast featuring cosy, funny and interesting game-leaning chats with a variety of folk from all across the country, but mostly London, because that's where I live. Come with me on a journey peppered with the sounds of travel, the outdoors and the hubbub of various middle-class outlets as we chat games, culture and anything else we want to talk about, because it's my podcast and I can do what I want, okay? That podcast once again... It's MGIF. Here we go, Season 5, Episode 6. It's with the incredible Bilal Zafar. Bilal is a stand-up comedian and is currently on tour with his show Care, which deals with his experiences of working in a private care home on minimum wage. He streams on Twitch as Zafar Cakes, and you will probably know him for his show Hot Pepsi, where he plays old Pro Evo soccer games in character as a failed manager. Apart from just streaming the game, he adds in post-match team talks, TV interviews and meetings with the team's staff and business partners, and has built over the course of 2+ years through lockdown this whole ongoing sort of sitcom drama, and has built up this cabal of dedicated fans who come and watch it every week, every episode. I was late for meeting Bilal thanks to Tubes in London randomly terminating halfway through their journeys, seemingly for a laugh. Happens a lot, I hate it, but hey, there you go. Once we did meet up, we went for a quick coffee at a local establishment called Acosta Coffee, where we discussed how our work was going, as well as sharing quick stories about awkward work gigs of the past, that sort of thing. We were chatting about what was on telly, what we've been watching on telly recently. We ended up chatting about Louis Theroux for a bit, the usual stuff, you know, before strolling over to his place to set up the mics proper and get stuck into conversation. This is probably the least game-centric of our interviews so far, but we do get there, I promise, and it's really good stuff. We talked about some of Bilal's then-upcoming but now available work, such as the short he filmed with Stevie Martin and Richard Herring, as well as his new podcast, Got a Problem, Mate, with Joey Page, which has just started. I think by the time this goes out, I think there's 2 episodes available. I've got stuck in. It's really good. It's really funny. And they do a video version of it as well. Very enjoyable. We talk about him appearing on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast and what that felt like. We compare UK and US comedy, stand-up comedy, and the different approaches to it, as well as Bilal getting obsessed with videos of really shit jobbing Benidorm comedians. We talk about frauds and people out of their depth and using that as an inspiration for comedy. We try and remember what infrared is. We talk about parody accounts and winding people up on Twitter. We, of course, talk about playing Pez, bad commentary, the joy of rough around the edges games from the past, and the patented EA Sports skeleton. I also asked Bilal a really important and insightful question about his buying decisions, so please stay tuned for that. Thank you. It was great to pod with Bilal. He's lovely and really funny, of course. I just really enjoyed my time chatting with him immensely. You join us now as we make our way into Bilal's place and set up the mics. We open with a chat about Twitch and streaming on Twitch and, you know, getting followers on Twitch and managing that relationship between yourself and fans and people who like your work and sort of managing their expectations about what they can expect of you outside of the performance itself. Right, here we go. MGIF, Season 5, Episode 6, Bilal Zafar.
They're technically corporates, but they won't pay you much. But it's like, it's a bit of money, so will you come and do this?
Yeah.
In a restaurant or whatever. I did a gig for some, it's just one level.
Uh-huh.
I did a gig for some students once, and I got there, and I was like, oh, is there a microphone? And they said,
wow.
Do you need a microphone? Yeah, and it's like, yeah, so that sort of thing doesn't happen as much now. I think it should
be else. That's, oh my god. Oh my god, out of the things you don't expect to... Sorry. Oh my god. Do you need a... That's amazing. What did he think you were going to do?
I don't know.
Just project, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I've been in a lot of situations where people have a gig thing set up and they have no idea what they do. Yeah.
Part of the fun in it.
Do you want a drink or anything?
Get water, I guess, from the old.
I kind of always keep people at arm's length.
Yeah.
Generally, with Twitch stuff. Yeah. Well, it's just weird when people suddenly like you. Like, I'm not sort of best friends with people immediately, like some people are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I find it difficult.
Like, there's comedians who will, like, have regular people that come to their gigs and they'll go out drinking with them after and stuff. And I never really.
That seems like a bad idea.
I don't know. I think I'm just a bit weird. I'm a bit like shy and awkward and stuff.
Yeah, but I would say, I think it's fair enough to be like, I'm not sure whether you should blend like drinking with people and like, you know, it's part of your audience. It's like, and like at the same time without being like, no, you are over there and I am the performer. But like the problem is if you get a certain kind of person, they'll expect more and more the more you give them. So you have to like, not that I'm sure people who do this are smart enough to gauge it, but you know, like you got to check, is this person like, are they all right? Are they just, or are they looking to sort
of build this? Yeah, I've heard some strange stories.
And then when you try and back out of that and say, well, I don't feel like going out tonight, and you know, is that
going
to cause problems? You have to sort of gauge what that person's like, you know? Yeah, it seems too risky to be worth it.
But it's something I'm worried about because, because I've had, a bunch of my friends now have had stalkery people or weird stories. Fuck. And I think, oh God, something like that's probably going to happen.
Is it, do you think people do it because if you are really busy and you're touring or you're on the road all the time, you don't have time to stop and like make friends with people or like hang out with people, you know, separate to work? So it almost seems like a compromise. Like, well, one, this person seems all right. They can be my mate for a bit. You know what I mean? Like, is it a kind of a trying to fill that gap maybe?
I guess so.
Yeah. Just seems like an awful idea. Like, Heron's got loads of stories about like just drinking with people like, after shows and stuff. That I don't know if he does it anymore, but it, like,
don't think so. No,
he used to do it a lot.
No, he's in and out of places very quick now.
Family, innit?
Yeah.
It changes a lot.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah.
He's very supportive, yeah.
He just seemed good.
Yeah, I'm going to make a thing with him soon. A little short film type thing is the plan.
Because you worked with him on the Killers thing with him, didn't you? He came on and did.
And he did, over lockdown, the first thing I think I did with him was I did a little web series called The Acting School of Excellence.
Okay.
That only went out, it was like a YouTube thing, and then I started doing it on Twitch, and it's just where I'm like an acting coach but I'm really bad. And then I do like little acting warm-ups with the guests, and it's, and like, you know, I'm mean to them and stuff, and it's just stupid. And he came on that and he was really funny on that,
right?
And then he had me on his podcast over Twitch, and then he had me in his real life one as well, which was really like, because I've listened to that since before I started comedy, so it's still weird to me that
how did that feel happened going,
really that. Really nervous actually, but it was really nice.
Was he good at like calming you down?
He's fine, he's very easygoing anyway, and he said like, you know, don't worry about it, it's, because, and also it's just, they're silly interviews anyway.
Yeah.
And he's got all the stupid emergency questions and stuff, so it's fine. It's not like being on like a panel show or whatever.
Yes, you're not like required to go, right, what do you think of that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Get something we can stick on telly now. You know, and blast out a little joke. A little like,
Exactly, yeah.
In fact, and obviously he's got that residual love of, from when he was with Stuart Lee, of like purposefully losing an audience for a bit because it's funny and then bringing it back. Right?
Well, this is the thing. The reason I wanted to do stuff with him, improvisey stuff, is because he's so funny on that podcast.
Yeah.
When he's so stupid, or when he just asks a really offensive question, like out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he'll just be quite mean.
Yeah, he lets himself
It's really funny, but then it's weird because it's like you don't see people like... It's like improv kind of comedy. It only like certain people do it. And then other comics don't really.
Yeah.
They'll mess around on a podcast, but they won't do anything else.
There's a difference between like improv being the point of the night
and like doing a bit, some improvising in the middle of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is an improv show. Oh, yeah. But it always comes out well. Like, there are people that I'm, whose stand up I think I like enough, is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they're much funnier when they're doing like a podcast series, or they appear on something just as themselves, or they're on a radio show just chatting and just with another, someone they already know who's also a stand up or whatever.
Yeah.
And then just whatever comes out.
Mm.
A lot of the time that's really good stuff, all right, really entertaining, because it's low stakes, so you don't mind what isn't hitting and what is. And then when something funny does come out of it, it feels natural. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the more natural thing makes a big difference.
Yeah.
If you look at like a lot of American comedians, a lot of the YouTube comments are like, I love this guy on podcasts, but I don't like his stand up that much.
Mm.
And I think with some of them, I think it's like an LA comedian thing, that some of them are just a bit lazy,
right,
with the stand up.
Because they're very much,
and they're making a lot of money off podcasting, so why would you even?
Yeah, there's that business side of it, isn't it, as well?
Yeah,
I mean, it's obviously generalizing, but like in America, there's a lot of,
oh,
like,
yeah, big time.
They really see it as a, I worked the circuit and I just, and I did my set, and like almost like an old kind of 70s, 80s British stand up
thing.
It's
weird,
right?
Over there that the whole thing, obviously, well, you know how, people used to always say about Louis C.K.
Yeah.
That, oh, he does an hour every year. He does a new hour of comedy every year. And that was blowing people's minds. But that's literally what we do here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's really good stuff. It's not like it's weak.
Yeah.
Because it's an hour every year. Like, some of the best shows you'll ever see happen at the Fringe, you know. But over there, it's different. Like, a lot of them do like the same 20-minute or 30-minute set or whatever for years and years. Which I don't understand at all. I just think that must be boring.
Yeah.
Doing a new bit is like, when you write something new and it works, that is the best.
Yeah.
That's like the best feeling ever. Yeah.
It's like, but yeah, I hadn't thought of that before. It is, you think about like 70s and 80s comics over here.
Mm.
They would do the same 10 minutes everywhere. Yeah. So it's almost like they've got that attitude now with the
Benidorm comedians.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it. Yeah, you've been getting heavily into that, right?
I went, so my my wife has like a proper job, and I do this comedy stuff and streaming and all that.
Sure.
So we sleep at very different times. So she'll be fast asleep sometimes, you know, by 11, and I'm awake at 2.
Yeah.
And I'm just on YouTube on my phone, and I don't know why, but I looked up. Oh, I know why. So I started watching a Peter Kay impersonator.
Oh God.
Tribute act.
Oh God.
Because I was like, why would
you?
I just thought, okay, who
did he look
does
like
it?
Him? Did he sound like
very?
Him?
Yeah, he's doing the voice. He might be from Bolton as well.
Yeah,
the guy,
that's sort of cheating there.
Yeah, but like he's just doing the same material that he does. But I'm like, who goes to see that?
Do you go to get tickets for Peter Kay and it's sold out, and then you go, well, do you know what? I'll just have the. Like a
maybe,
diet
although
Coke,
it's
an off-brand.
It seemed like a corporate event. The video I saw, so I don't think the people checked. They liked it, but so that was blowing my mind. I was watching a Lee Evans tribute guy, and the comments, like, because people were slagging these people off. People are like, "This is embarrassing."
Lee Evans tribute.
Yeah.
Does he get like get himself sweaty beforehand?
He might have a towel with him just because that's the thing. But he does the face.
Sorry, I'm sweating.
He walks around like. But one of the comments that I loved was like, you know, like, oh, he's just as good. You can't.
No, he can't be.
You can't say that. That's so offensive, isn't it?
So insulting.
Yeah. But then that led me on to, I don't know, one of these impersonators doing Benidorm. And then I was like, Benidorm? Now that's a weird place. And I just started looking at comedians doing sets in Benidorm, and I thought, that is like, because sometimes you do sets in different places and you have to change that way. And I was like, what is this going to be like? And I thought there'd be some value to it. I thought it'd be like, there'd be good stuff in there, even if it was mostly bad. But no, it's absolutely all of the stuff I saw is shockingly bad.
Yeah, like, not even one redeeming, like, oh,
no.
Actually.
Not at all.
Wow.
Really weak. stuff and really racist, misogynistic, you know, all of that. But like proper, like you wouldn't believe. Like no one would accuse you of being like woke if you said this is racist. Like it just is.
There's no room for like.
Yeah. And a lot of them copy material off each other, which is mad as well.
Right. So you hear someone else delivering the same.
Yeah. Exactly the same bit, like the same like four jokes in a row or something. It's not even that good.
No.
But yeah, that was blowing my mind.
Is this, when is it from, this stuff? Are we talking about it?
Some of it is new and some of it was like 8 years ago. One of them.
This year?
Yeah. One of them is at a funeral wake in Benidorm. He's doing a,
Hold on.
Yeah.
Has that person died in Benidorm?
Yeah, because they, a lot of people move there, don't they?
Right, okay, fair enough. Yeah,
a lot
yeah,
of racists move to Benidorm.
They can't get enough of the 20-minute set.
It blows my mind, a place like that.
That's fine.
I want to go. Like, there was, you might have seen, I put it on Twitter. There's a little trailer for one, he's called the British Bulldog of Comedy. And then they made a trailer for his, he's doing a show somewhere in a working men's club.
I'm just thinking of WWF, though.
Like. Yeah. Oh, you've got to see this trailer. Hey, do you know like Tim and Eric and Vic, is it Vic Berger?
A little bit.
You've seen he does weird edits of videos. The trailer for this comedy show is like that.
But not
it's that bad, yeah. And I thought, I want to go. Because...
when the cuts are just completely like...
Yeah, and the sound in it, the images, everything is wrong. Yeah, I'll send you it after you've got to see this video.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it's sometimes you go down a rabbit hole like that. And I was talking to a comedian about this the other day. And it's like you feel inspired by it, but you don't know why. Do you know what I mean? It's like this encouraged. Could be something.
Oh, right. I thought you meant like encouraged because that's so bad.
Oh, there's
like...
that as well, actually.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
Because you do, everyone, I think, has a bit of the imposter syndrome stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And then you watch that and you think, oh, no, I'm good.
No. It's all right.
I can do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, wait. Yeah, no, this is fine. I am doing the job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, so you've been inspired like what? Like just...
like I could do something with it. Or sometimes you watch a thing and you think, oh, I could base a character on this one day or something.
Yeah.
Like we were watching a Vice documentary the other day about a wellness festival.
Right.
Which is very like wanky, you know, very rich people go into festivals in sunny places where it's like you make great connections with people and there's these talks about these breathing techniques and all of this stuff.
That whole, the word wellness, sorry to jump in, the word wellness really concerns me as an idea because it's like, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to say it's health but without being legally held accountable to it. As you go, it's not health, it's wellness.
And it costs thousands as well, right?
And you can do anything in that scope then, you know, it's like a really sort of sinister escalation of, if you look on the side of like toothpaste and it says may help reduce cavities, you know, or like skin cream may over time,
yeah,
if you stand here, like reduce the appearance of you looking a bit older depending on who you ask, you know, like
there's a lot of things that may prevent cancer,
including Noel Edmonds is, did you see that at the time?
What was it again?
He got into this machine that cured cancer that he thought, that said it cured cancer.
What did it do?
It sounds familiar,
but I can't remember all the machine.
it looked like an old accordion or something, but he was like,
oh my God, it does.
Oh, and he's tweeting, promoting it and saying it's great and... you know, and it can even cure cancer. Yes, cure cancer like this. And you just fucking put it up there like it's
really bad, isn't
it? He's a wild
reminds you of the bit from, you seen Man on the Moon?
No.
There's a thing that Andy Kaufman did because he was dying.
Yeah.
And as a final resort kind of thing.
Yeah.
Went to like a place that spiritually gets rid of your cancer or whatever.
Right.
And he realizes it's just fake.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds you of that kind of.
A little bit like that, but imagine that, but he... definitely believed it, basically, is the equivalent.
I need to look into that.
His cancer machine. I can, if you sorry to jump into what you're saying, I just thought about that. I might have derailed us a bit there.
That's fine. I ramble quite a lot.
Noel Edmonds' cancer box claim dismissed by firm. He said, a simple box. The Deal or No Deal presenter said it was a simple box that slows aging, reduces pain, and tackles cancer.
How?
I don't know. It looks like that. It looks like an old
hi-fi
or something. What? Fuck knows.
I went to it was going to be a job interview that I saw on Gumtree when I was like 21, but it was a pyramid scheme thing, like a meeting. And they were like, oh, you sell this product and you get this much, and yeah, clearly pyramid scheme type, you know, Avon type thing. And one of the products was a vest that has infrared, which is really good for you. I don't know. And at the time I thought, oh, that looks good. And then I thought, no, I would have heard of it, right? If it worked. This wouldn't be the place I hear about it from this Gumtree.
Yeah. You'd know. Infrared. Why is infrared good for you?
I don't know. I think they had a lot of stuff that was infrared. What is it? I just know that old Nokias, you could like send stuff, but I don't know if it worked.
It's what you use for your telly, isn't it?
Oh, is that infrared?
Yeah, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, right, okay, cool.
But that's like, it's a light frequency you can't see unless you have the camera to look at it, right?
Oh, right.
So I guess they use it for night vision and stuff like that.
No idea.
Infrared.
You don't hear it talked about much.
Like ultraviolet? No. Is that real colour?
Bluetooth was better.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That replaced it on phones, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'd send a file to your friend and it took 4 minutes.
Because infrared needs a line of sight.
Yes. But these new remotes are Bluetooth, which are great. You can point it at the ceiling. Oh,
I'm always doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just going, okay. Yeah. Showing off.
Yeah. Oh, the guy I was talking about.
Yeah.
The wellness guy. Oh, yeah. On that documentary, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a little bit where the person doing the documentary was interviewing him, and he's quite intense, this guy that teaches a breathing technique, whatever. And she says jokingly to him, she says, oh, you must really hate when this happens. And he goes, no, I don't hate anyone. Don't hate anything. Which is like, come on. Yeah. And then...
Oh, one of those guys. He's like, we don't use that word.
Yeah, yeah, one of those. And then towards the end of the interview, he talks to his assistant and he goes, you know, I'm on my phone. You could have tapped me on the shoulder and told me we need communication. Next time, tap me on the shoulder. And it's so passive aggressive. Ooh. And it's great. It's such a good little insight into who this guy really is. And then...
I can see how that would inspire you.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I'm going to keep a note of that because if I'm going to write a character, there's going to be that bit where the mask slips and it can be through someone secondary like that.
It's funny that he's...
I told you not to do that.
Secretly angry.
And you go, oh, there's something that really bothers him that we're getting a slight glimpse into, like, oh, that's what cracks him like that as
and
well.
And then the presenter even sort of said, she said like... when she said it felt a bit fake, and then when the interview ended, he didn't make any eye contact with her. Where at the start, he was like hugging her and all of this, and then it's done and he's off. You know,
people like that, they're fascinating and sort of frightening because there's something going on. Like there, I like to think, you know, this like John Ronson talked about that in Psychopath Test, where all the kind of the major heads of companies, the CEOs, presidents, and people in these like really high positions of power and wealth, right? The theory is that basically most of them are psychopaths because you have to have this mindset, this ruthlessness, like an unnatural ruthlessness to be able to do what needs to be done and to work and have like no emotional processing to be able to just get there, right?
Yeah.
That's like a theory, which I think I agree with. It sounds a bit too exciting to be true, but I can see what they mean.
But I know what you mean. Like, I think, if you want to get to the very top, you must be a bit power hungry, right?
But I like the idea that people like that are kind of like shit psychopaths. So like they've got the mindset, but they're not actually good at anything, so they have to just have this kind of low level con shit going on, right? It's weird. So weird. Because you're kind of with that, you do have a tendency to be drawn to like that kind of what would you like categorize it all under? Stuff like that, the shit Benidorm things. And then like obviously like people who like try and string a tweet together and it's just crap and they're just you know This kind of sway the people on Twitter who are just like...
I like people that are out of their depth.
Yeah.
I think that's very funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. I think that's like the best character.
Yeah.
Someone who's, you know... That's why I think stuff like Nathan For You is so good.
Because
he's not... He doesn't seem very good at it.
Yeah.
And that's just where all the great stuff comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
If he was like really high energy, confident, it wouldn't be funny, would it?
No, no.
I like Tim Heidecker a lot. His kind of character he does of himself. Have you seen like On Cinema and stuff?
So I've only seen bits of it. And obviously like everyone initially through like the spread of the meme, the very memeable bits from the Tim and Eric show, right?
Yeah.
But the major thing I saw recently was his, so he does, is it a weekly podcast?
Yeah.
Or like a video?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Podcast. And there's one where apparently, like unannounced, they did it and as a full parody of Joe Rogan.
I've seen it, yeah.
And it's like 17 hours long, but it's like 1 hour repeated, yeah. Like loot, right? And that was just...
It's very funny, isn't it?
Possibly one of the best parodies I think I've ever seen.
He is like...
It's perfect.
I love him, right? Like, I really like... He's one of my like idols, yeah?
Right.
But I think he's such... He's like such an innovator. Like, he has so many amazing ideas, I think.
Yeah.
Which I kind of sometimes wish I thought of things he does. Do you know what I mean?
Do you ever look at people like that? Like, especially on like, say, if he's doing his podcast or his video one. And you just kind of try and, I like study them and go, what is it about this person? Like, what are their qualities where they just, and they just don't look scared of anything, I think is part of it. They're just, they don't, they'll just do something. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, they're just
I guess
like,
so.
Fuck it.
He's been doing it a while though, hasn't he? So it's like,
he's
he knows. Yeah. He's got his audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's comfortable.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure there's a point where he wasn't like that, but
yeah. Like the On Cinema stuff. Which is absolutely, it's so good.
Right.
Because it's, what's so they just review films, okay. Is what it is. But yeah. He's just this unhinged character.
Yeah.
Right. And he starts bringing in all these other things,
right.
Like a weird medicine thing he's promoting, you know, holistic thing, and this vape thing, which ends up killing loads of people. And then there's a trial. Have you seen the trial thing he did?
No.
He does a thing where he goes on trial in a proper little courtroom and stuff. And it's really fun. And it's so, the trial thing is so funny. And I got inspired with the gaffer thing I do for Hot Pepsi. That's a bit like him, I think, where he's like, the character he does is like a little bit right wing. Like he considers himself conservative, a bit like aggressive.
Yeah.
Wants to be like an alpha male type.
Yeah.
But like I say, it's a bit out of his depth and doesn't quite understand stuff. Yeah. And I just think that's great.
I feel like you've got the Twitch stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you... Is it fair to say that you keep them quite separate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're so different as things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I get asked a lot what I prefer, and I don't... It's like, you can't really answer it because they're completely different things. I think a live audience is always best.
Right.
But you want that variety. Because that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that reaction is like... Because it's different, and, like, you get to go all over the place and do it in places that I've never been before. And that's amazing. But then Twitch is like when I do Hot Pepsi, that's like, or when I make something on stream, I really enjoy that. Like the England song I did most recently. Yeah. That's really fun. Like this, and there's nothing like that. You can't.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't enjoy making that by myself, but doing it sort of collaboratively and doing it on stream is really fun. Even making the little music video thing is really fun doing it on stream.
Yeah. Because there was... Not total sidetrack, but a slight sidetrack makes me think of when you had Gav Murphy on. Was it a couple of years back now?
Yeah,
and he come on as like a
he was a PR social media manager,
And then you had to craft a tweet which occasionally comes back up, right? And that was just on the fly, right? Obviously, just like messing around.
That was making me cry.
Yeah,
I think we planned that he would help me do a tweet.
Yeah, so you
and
had
that was it.
The structure, and then you just go.
Those were the best. Those.
Yeah.
There was something about everyone being free as well. So I should explain what it is.
Sorry, yeah.
So, so Hot Pepsi is a thing I do where I'm a football manager of PES United, which is a fictional team in old PES games, which is a bit of a cult thing.
Yeah.
It's got all like made up players and stuff that everyone knows now. And sometimes I'd have guests on, which is just, I'd just do like a Zoom call or a Discord call, but it'd be in my office and it'd be live as well.
Yeah.
And that was really exciting because I wouldn't say who was coming on.
Right.
But I'd say we've got a meeting with the club lawyer or whatever.
Yeah.
And then no one ever knew who it was. Like even the first time it was, we're meeting the owner of the club and it's Josie Long.
Yeah.
And she loves it because she's she's literally the opposite, obviously, of a crazy billionaire, you know, she hates all of,
perfect, yeah.
So that was great. So she just gets to satirize all that stuff she hates.
Yeah.
And, I've had so many people like Danny Wallace being like he is the operations manager. His title doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So he never knows what his job is, which is really funny. It's like the director of operations manager director or something.
Yeah.
That, because over that period of time, everyone was free.
Yeah.
So now it's different. If I ask someone to be on it, it's like, we've got this, you know.
Yes, of course.
And it's harder for everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was great. And I did loads as well. I did so many of those little meetings, which I think were all amazing.
Yeah.
When I look back, like they were all really, I think, really funny and creative in their own ways.
Yeah. We were talking about that semi-improv thing, isn't it? Where you think about, like, obviously a classic example is Curb, right? Where they have the outline and then they just say shit in the middle of it, right? And obviously they've got a lot of time and money to like, keep doing that for as long as you need to get good stuff, right?
Yeah.
But that framework in general seems like a good setup. So you get someone who you know is going to work well in whatever you set up, basic outline, and then just go for it.
That's it. But then sometimes they really surprise you, like Marie-Elaine Robertson, who is a Shetland comedian. She's excellent. She was my daughter in one episode, right? In one of those meetings.
Yeah.
And because I always, this is what I love about Hot Pepsi as well, is that because it's an ongoing, I've done like over 160 now, I think.
Shit.
I know, since 2020. It's an ongoing story. And I've mentioned in passing a few times that I've got a daughter that doesn't talk to me anymore. and then to suddenly have her on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, because there's people that follow, there's people that, you know, watch it occasionally, whatever. Mm. And there's people that have seen every single minute of every one.
Right, yeah.
And then I add a story thing out of nowhere. Yeah. And she did it so brilliantly where she was called Penelope. And she did like a posh English accent because she's been spoiled, you know. She was called Penelope, but she said a thing about how I wanted to name her Pele Nelope. Which is so brilliant. Like... you know, it's such a good little joke about how I never cared about her, I only cared about football.
Yeah, yeah.
And now Brendan Rodgers is her stepdad. Really, and like really just...
Oh, that's really good. Yeah.
I'm really proud of all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still going.
Do you think it helps? Do you think it in any way feeds back into stand-up, into the other side of things? Do they like...
Kind of. So it's not been a case of I can use material from Hot Pepsi on stage at all, really. But I think what it definitely did was that Twitch gave me like a new confidence in myself. Where like, I think before... So my life before Twitch was like... So until basically just before lockdown, it was write a new Edinburgh show, preview it around wherever the country. You go up to Edinburgh, you do this show that you worked on an hour for like a month. You do it like 25 shows in a row or something like that.
Yeah.
And then people come and see it, producers see it and stuff. And they're like, oh, we might want to do a thing with you, but then it never really gets anywhere. Mm. You might get the odd nice paid gig off the back of the Fringe as well. Like I got to go and do the Amsterdam Fringe thing once, which was really cool. But ultimately it wasn't doing a lot, right? And also the cost of Edinburgh is going up and up.
Yeah.
It's basically just set up for rich people, the whole thing, you know? Yeah. So it's just felt like it was getting harder and harder. And it felt like, because in 2016, my first Edinburgh show got a Best Newcomer nomination, which is a big deal over there. No one knows what this stuff is outside of Edinburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
But over in that bubble,
yes,
that was like a huge deal. And then it was like not reaching that level again. Like I just wasn't getting that interest. So it felt like I've peaked kind of thing. Like I honestly felt like...
yeah.
That time's gone. I had a few little panel show audition read through things and then it was like, I think that's all gone now as well. And then I started Twitch and then suddenly that was like a whole new audience and I was getting to do way sillier stuff.
Mm.
that kind of, I think that I always wanted to do. And then that gives you, I think, just a renewed, like, you realize, oh no, I am actually funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think
yeah.
I am good and creative, but you just don't feel it all the time.
Yes.
When you're just doing stand-up.
And I feel like it, in that setup, as you're talking like from 2016 and going through the sort of the Edinburgh mill, you, and waiting for things to come up and waiting for people to say, do you want to come and do this? Or
yeah.
It feels like everything's out of your hands, right?
That's it, yeah. And I should say, like, it's weird me even saying that, because it's like, it was always going well, pretty much. Like, sell plenty of tickets and all of that, yeah. And loads of people loved it. But it's that external stuff gets in your head about reviewers and the awards things and stuff, which is a real shame, but you can't help it.
No.
Like, no one can really... There are comedians who, like, decide not to let any reviewers in and stuff like that, but right. not many, you know?
Yeah. And any sort of creative thing now, and you need to, there are so many people, whatever field it is, there's so many people who want to do it. There's so many, you know, and there are certain routes that everyone goes down and that kind of thing that you can, you need something else or something different to figure out what your thing is and what your... to find your voice.
Yeah, but it's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because especially if you're doing the online stuff, if you don't have an audience, if you can't get an audience for it, what do you do? Because even with like Hot Pepsi, like the thing is, it did well quite quickly and people did like it.
Yeah.
But then Limmy massively helped. Like, I know that.
Yes.
You know, it's not like, oh, I did it all by myself. He really kindly, because we're friends, he would tweet about it quite a bit. Because he did, I think he did genuinely like what I was doing and he felt a bit kind of proud.
Yeah.
Because he encouraged me to get on Twitch and then I really went for it. You
yeah.
know? So that was a big help.
Sure.
And having friends like people like, oh, David O'Doherty and like Danny Wallace, whoever, who were guests on the stream. Like
it just
that.
Starts to pull.
If I didn't know these people, then it's not.
Yeah.
So, you
for
know,
sure, for sure.
I know that it's not been kind of all me.
But then obviously the other side of it, when you get people to it, it has to be good. It has to have
True.
Quality,
yeah.
You know, otherwise they will just fuck off again.
Yeah.
And
but
I think
there's definitely a lot of good stuff that doesn't get any views, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So did you learn like all the Twitch stuff in terms of like the
OBS.
Graphics and the OBS and the overlay stuff? Mm-hmm. Is that you just did that on the as you were going along as well?
I spent it might have been a week over lockdown, but which was a long time.
Yeah. You know,
and the first lockdown where we had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
And I just watched loads of YouTube videos about it, like Harris Heller.
Right.
You know that guy? No.
No.
He's like just one of these people who's massive for telling people how to
do
stream
stuff.
And stuff, you know. Watching, because it's quite hard, like you think, because I can do a bit of video editing or whatever, you think, oh, I can stream, but it's hard learning OBS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely different thing, but a very useful tool. For other stuff, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Really, really useful. So I just spent a good week or week and a half just watching loads of stuff, just trying to learn about it. It's really a lot to get your head around, Twitch.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of people, I think, a lot of comedians and people like that jumped on and I think didn't bother to like learn what it was or how to properly use it, and that didn't really benefit them.
Yeah.
Like there was a like comedy company that does the odd film stand up and stuff. I think they're quite good, but they came onto Twitch and they just weren't doing Twitch stuff. They just had comedians doing hour long like their shows to a webcam.
Yeah.
And I think they were doing a thing where it was like you watch half of it and then it ends and you've got to pay to watch the rest on Zoom or something.
Right,
and it was like,
right.
Don't do that. Either do it or don't, right?
People just won't. They'll just take the first half and go, all right, I'll do something else now.
Yeah. Like you have to respect the thing you're doing at least.
Yeah.
The medium or whatever. I think, that's very important.
I think that's like a lack of understanding of what that sort of financial model is now as well, because there is just so much. They don't realize that there is so much you can just go and look at for free. Or go, well, I'll just go onto one of another six apps on my phone that's got something I can just look at.
Exactly.
And the engage, because there's so much stuff, you're not, you know, the engagement is like, oh, I'll just look at this now.
Exactly.
So you just can't really do that.
You've got to do it for free.
Yeah.
And then the people that will support you will support you if they can. That's it, isn't it? You can't just make a thing and be like, you can only have it if you're paying.
Mm.
unless you're obviously a, you know, like I filmed a stand-up special with Go Faster Stripe, who are really good, and that's you know, that's a thing you have to pay a fiver for. But I've been doing this stuff for a bit of time now, so there should be enough people that are interested, you know. But and you couldn't be new
and
do that. It wouldn't make any sense.
It's another reason to keep the two sides of it separate as well, I guess.
Yeah,
because you're like, well, this is this thing, and then...
Yeah. I think eventually I've got to come up with something that is... So I tried doing a live Twitch show thing, which was okay, but I think it was hard to sell tickets because no one knew what it was.
Yeah.
But I think one day I'm going to find the middle ground of live and streaming.
There's a book that I've read 10 pages of that my friend recommended to me that I bought because it's called The Curve. And it's about that sort of model and where it started. And they talk about it starting with Trent Reznor.
Oh, yeah.
Gave away his album on, this is like, I don't know, 20 years ago now, where he gave away an album for free online. And then he said, or you can have this version of it with extras for a quid. Or I've also pressed these limited edition vinyls and there's 200 of them and they're like £2,000 each.
Oh, okay.
Or you can just listen to it for free. And so he kind of, and obviously there's... similarities between that and Patreon, right? And that kind of thing. So they say that's a very early example of doing that. And it kicked off, didn't it? Or like Radiohead did the pay whatever
that.
You want.
Right? Yeah.
So
I think I still pirated that.
Did you? Yeah. Which is fine.
Which is silly. I could have paid 10p.
Rather than like, yeah. Right, okay. It costs you more in electricity. So like. but you know that, and those are kind of early examples of that model, right? So yeah, the Curve is apparently really good. So once I get around to it, actually reading it,
know what's hard is it's different if you're releasing an album or a comedy special.
Yeah.
But then if you want like on Patreon, I can't be that active on it. I try, but I'm struggling to figure out what I can make for Patreon because my favorite stuff I just do on stream. And I like it being free.
Yeah, you don't want to go, oh, but you can't have this. You've got to not make it...
That's what I'm struggling with. I'm like, what can I deny people? And then, oh, you have to pay. So one thing I have is Bad Film Club, which is where I just watch a bad film on stream.
Yeah.
I now put that on Patreon and that makes a bit of sense because it's like, it shouldn't really be on Twitch.
Mm.
You know? So you take it off Twitch immediately, stick it on Patreon, and then that kind of works. But that's hard. Like... keeping that, and also Patreon has a really... Do you have Patreon?
Yeah, at the moment we don't, but I've used it. Yeah,
it has that frustrating thing where it gives you a notification if someone unsubscribes, and I don't mind that people leave because they might have money issue or whatever. Yeah, but I don't want to be told, right? Yes. Like I don't want to be told if someone's unfollowing me or unsubscribing or on anything. So that's kind of bad. So I had like 60 when I was using it a fair bit and it's dropped to 40 because I've been so busy with Edinburgh and then getting married and stuff. I've been so busy and moving into this flat has been, you know, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
You don't realize how much work that kind of thing is. We've only just got it to a place where we're kind of happy with it.
That's the other thing with Patreon as well, which is why I came off it for now, is because if you can't get... if you can't get the output that you think people should be getting, you feel bad. And then things just slip and slip and you're I haven't actually put anything out for quite long because other stuff gets in the way of your life or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you see some people dropping off and it's
hard, but I look at it as like, I look at Patreon as like a 10-year project. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Where it's like, I'm not going to do a lot on there now. You know, I'm going to try, but then if in like 10 years I can be making $1,000 a month on it, that would be really good.
It's just there ticking over, like going up and up. Yeah, you can just.
I mean, right now it's going down, so maybe 20 years, but yeah, I think that's the way you have to look at certain things.
Yeah,
not everything can take off that quick, but then also, well, something with my career that I have. I guess it's good. It's been frustrating so far, like trying to get on TV and stuff because I've got very close to things. But then there is that potential that could happen.
Yeah.
And then literally overnight,
that'll just...
I could have way more people interested in my stuff, and then that helps everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is that. I had something happen, which I was going to say. Well, so I've not streamed for 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
And I've said, oh, I've been busy, whatever. But actually, see, this is another thing with the Twitter, with Twitch and all of that stuff. When people post about their mental health all the time, and they're like, oh, I need a break and all of that, which is good, but I don't want to always do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't want people to always know that I need a bit of a break. So what happened was I filmed like a short stand-up set for a new show on Dave.
Okay.
And then I found out that they cut me out of it.
Right.
Which I don't... It's a weird thing because it's like, I know it's not because I was bad, because it was a good gig. I think they like overbooked it.
Yes.
Because they tried not to have me on it the day before, and then my agent made sure they filmed it, and I was paid and everything, but I wasn't in it. And that was really got to me, because I keep seeing people tweet about it, and then it was on TV yesterday, and that just knocked my confidence massively. So that's why I need to be in the mood to do Hot Pepsi. I need to be in this bit of a silly mood. I've just not felt like it.
You know exactly that feeling, and you know, in terms of like, because you know, we do different things, but that if you're working for yourself, freelance, creative, and you're going out to people to get things made or done, working with people, and then suddenly something just, you get chopped, like for whatever the situation is, you'll get chopped out of something for whatever reason, in whatever way, right, depending on what you do, and then you'll see the thing carrying on without you or something like that, or there'll be a tweet and you'll just be trying to get about your day and you'll just see the thing and you'll be like, oh, that's just put a fucking signal on the next, you know, hour. Well, I just sort of, I know exactly what you mean with that.
Yeah, and it's like, and you know, I know I'll be over it. It's not like a huge thing, but it does get you a little bit. And I know that hopefully I'll have things that are much bigger than this thing happen.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's just, you know, the excitement of doing it and everything. And then I told loads of people.
Yeah, that's obviously the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Because when you film it, you don't expect to be cut. You think that's it. No. That doesn't usually happen like that. But it's a weird kind of new show, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been... Yeah, so I've needed just a bit of a break and just play FIFA career mode. Villarreal.
right.
You know? So I do XG Boy, which is a Twitter account. I do a stream where it's just running this Twitter account that I have, like a parody account, which is a football Twitter account.
Okay.
Which football Twitter is a horrible place.
Yeah.
They ratio each other, and I don't have time to go into all the...
I've seen bits of it from my mates who like...
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? It's really stupid. Yeah. And it's a weird thing. There's a lot of fans of XG Boy. It's really strange. But I might do similar ones, which are like film... Twitter where this account has stupid opinions, and because I quite like films as well, so that kind of thing, it's just fun to sort of jump into that world.
That's something you like doing, dabbling in that stuff from the
I saw again, I think it was another like little Vice documentary, which was about like incels and stuff online,
right?
And this woman, it's her job, like a proper like government thing, where she has to like infiltrate these groups and make a fake account, like make a bunch of fake accounts, like a Reddit or, you know, whatever, 4chan or whatever, and it has to all be the same fake guy to try and infiltrate these people who might be planning some scary stuff. I thought, that is a fun job though. Yeah,
you could do that.
I could do that very easily.
Yeah. The number of people that you catch up, like when you and Sue's like do like a tweet.
But I wouldn't need to make loads of accounts.
People that come in.
Like, oh, that's mad.
Defending either you or her, or
yeah. So that I should explain that my friend Suze Kempner, who's an excellent comedian, who's got massive on Twitter, like really, really big over the last few years.
Yeah,
I can have a go at her about anything, and it's the most obvious nonsense. Like, she'll tweet a thing and I'll say, and you've said this, why? or like there's more important things going on in the world. Yeah. And the amount of people that jump on me to have a go at me is so interesting, because they haven't taken the time to look at my account and like comedian, or also that me and Suze do loads of stuff together. Like we've done loads of things. So they're not proper Suze fans.
No.
It's really bizarre.
It's always.
But it's fascinating. And it's funny to double down and be stupider, right?
Yeah, yeah. Until, are they going to get this at any point?
Yeah. And quite often when you're parodying a thing, people will believe it's real. Like, there's a weird account which says things like, if you support the NHS and you think this, then give this a retweet. And it gets like 50,000 retweets. But then they also like sell pens. Right? It's all a bit shady.
So I
tweeted like, I just copy her tweet.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, if you support the NHS and you think this, then retweet this, follow my Twitter, join my Patreon, all of this. And I just list a bunch of things. And most people get that it's a joke, but then occasionally someone will be like, well, why would I give you any money, blah, blah, blah. And then I always reply like, you better join my Patreon now or you're in big trouble, you know?
Yeah.
And then sometimes people realize you're joking and sometimes they don't.
They don't, yeah.
Sorry, I know I can go off on a lot of tangents, but there's just so much stuff.
It's good. I love it. This is what I want. Pez, I'll do slightly more games. Pez, right?
Yeah.
So old Pez is something close to my heart as well.
Is it?
I've got a mate who, like, I've known him from university and I've not seen him for a while because of lockdown and, you know, because of COVID and other stuff. But every time I see him, we go to the local supermarket, we get a bottle of gin, we order a Domino's, and we just play like Pez 2005 or, you know, just some of the daft ones, right? And we've got a load of shit running jokes and we just sit there and we play till like 3 a.m. and we do the same thing the next day. Then I go home, right? Because that's what we've done since it came out, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. So that was, as you say, there's like a certain set of people who remember that, right? And we're talking about like grabbing a niche and setting all your hot Pepsi around it and around the old Pez, basically, right? Yeah, and it's just stuff. So when I saw that, it triggered stuff in my head, right? And it's just stuff like the song, the weird, what I love about it, like the weird indie songs on the title menus that were like, that you'd never heard of the bands. They were kind of like... We're talking about like Peter Kay impersonators, right? Yeah. They were like indie bands of the time impersonators, right? Like also runs and stuff. And like Rakoba.
What's
the
that?
The stats on Rakoba. So there's a player, I think he's played for Inter.
Oh, right, yeah.
Or was it AC? I think it was Inter. Yeah. Anyway, one of the Milan teams. Rakoba, who's like a good player at the time. And the guy, Seabass, who was the developer.
Yeah.
It is known as Seabass, I can't remember his real name. He just loved Rakoba. He just loved like his favorite player. So his stats were like 20 points higher than everyone else in every stat.
That's excellent.
Like balance.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't knock him off the ball, even though he's like this amazing dribble. You just couldn't touch him. Yeah. And my mate would always pick, I think it was Inter. And I'd have to, you know, we'd do the derby and he just kicked Rakoba. You just can't touch him.
Yeah.
Like it's just so funny.
Was it
like,
Adriano?
No, Rakoba.
Okay, because people talk about Adriano being,
I think,
like,
he may
overpowered,
have been in the
basically.
Next one of the,
that was Pez 6, I think. He was on the cover.
Basically, whoever his favorite player was at the time was like literally you couldn't.
Well, that's interesting because they also did it with, because Konami's Japanese.
Yeah.
All the players from that part of the world would be really good.
Yeah.
Or have really good potential.
I remember when they were obsessed with Beckham, right? Yeah. In Japan. And then I can't remember which edition of Pez it was, but they gave Beckham this really elaborate, obviously they worked for ages on it, free kick animation.
Yeah, I know.
So everyone else's was just like a fucking, like there's like the sort of the knee extending, and that was it. And his was like, he did the whole his arms, where his arms came round, and it went on for fucking ages. He went, and obviously his free kick skills like 99. Shit just cracks me up.
But those were excellent games.
Yeah.
Because they were weird.
Yeah.
And no one, right? It's a shame. Like, because of like Pez United and the Castolo and all of these players, which something quite interesting about that is that I've had a bunch of meetings with Konami Europe.
Oh, right.
Because the Pez stuff was going well.
Right.
That's kind of over now because the games have kind of died a bit. The Pez games.
eFootball.
eFootball.
Which I didn't even look at because it was more depressing than
Yeah, but I was I made a little film about the Pez United stuff, like a mockumentary thing about, you know, and I spoke to them, and there was a whole kind of grey area around. Basically, I wasn't allowed to use any footage of the newer games because I could get sued, right?
Oh, right.
If I, because there were times when I jumped into the new Pez game, eFootball, but they said with the old ones though, with like Pez 5 and stuff, they don't. Nobody seems to know, apparently, from what I've heard. No one seems to know who has the rights to like Castolo and stuff. Because someone just did it, right? In 2005 or 4, someone just made this team of random stereotypical players, right?
Which I love so much.
Amazing Dodo, you know.
Von Mistelrealm is my favourite.
Yeah.
Von, what's his foot? What's the guy?
But that was a fake. That was a non-licensed one, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they had to call him von Mistelrealm.
Yeah. That's great.
What I like about that, isn't the legal standard you have to change two letters for something to
I
not
don't
be,
know.
You have to, two, in general, I think in terms of copyright or whatever, trademarking, two, at least two things have to be different for you to get away with it, to, you know, the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So you think maybe just change a couple of letters, but they sort of... went a bit overboard and changed it all for Mr. Rao.
Well, I guess they weren't sure, right? That's the thing. It has a feeling of it's been done by a few guys, right? Yeah. But it's great.
Yeah.
And then, like, with FIFA, you didn't have any of that. You just said, oh, look, you can get the Man United proper kit or whatever. And that's all.
It wasn't as good a game at the time.
No, it
either.
Wasn't. It was crap. Really. Yeah. It was really easy from what
fun,
I remember.
Yeah.
But Pez was good.
Yeah.
Even, it was really interesting. When I went back to doing the Pez 5 streams,
yeah.
where I started doing that, I thought it's going to be easy because I was so good when I was 13. You know,
yeah.
you win the Champions yeah. League yeah. every year, yeah. batter everyone. It's so hard compared to newer football games because... Like, if you play FIFA now, for example, it's pretty easy as a game. Like, you press triangle, you get a perfect through ball in. Or the crosses are all very easy from almost anywhere on the pitch. You just put a cross in and you can score a header, right?
Yeah.
In Pez, it was not like that at all. You needed to time everything, right?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
And you know, you can't just spam a button.
Yeah.
And get the ball in the box. You've got to time it. And I found it really hard at the start. We couldn't score.
No.
First few streams, like, we couldn't score a goal. And I was getting frustrated, yeah.
But of course, that plays into things well anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got that element of story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
whatever happens is good.
Yeah.
That's the great thing. And I don't know what's going to happen either, which is excellent.
No.
You know.
But yeah, it's that plays back into what I was saying about, like, games having a lot of things that are just in their infancy, because that's not that long ago, that stuff, but you could see how kind of Wild West that shit is in terms of, like, oh, we'll just make the names quite similar, or we'll just, you know, just really winging it, right? Everything's a bit rough and shit.
It's great, though.
It's great.
The ability to edit the kit is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
The admin. Yeah. It's quite funny because we got Pepsi spelt wrong as our sponsor, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was literally, I would have been 13, right?
Yeah.
And I thought it would be cool to have the sponsor as Hugo Boss. I thought that was like really cool and like fashionable and like kind of an upmarket sponsor.
Yeah.
So bad,
love
isn't it?
Hugo Boss, baby.
With the font, you know, like the proper, because you could do it, like the Hugo Boss kind of font. Yeah,
I love it. Because you played also, you've had like, is it Brian Lara cricket?
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that was a belter.
That's brilliant. That's just a game that I was obsessed with around the same time.
Right. Yeah. So another one of those that's like,
and cricket games are not that fun now.
No.
When I've tried,
yeah.
Have you ever played them?
I have. Yeah. Yeah.
They just don't have that thing, because the problem is they're just trying to go for realism in these games.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter about.
Yeah.
All of that stuff, just make it simple.
They talk about like B tier stuff, especially people approaching the 40s like me. We miss this kind of PlayStation 1 era of like B tier games. There's just fewer people checking what was going on in general, and things were like a bit rough but a bit weird, but they were allowed to make creative decisions that were to make stuff fun or, you know, weird or unique in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's more. You can still obviously find that now in other stuff like indie games. There's loads of freedom to make what you want, right?
Yeah.
But like, just there's just this certain sweet spot around that time where things were like a bit shit, but in a fun way.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, Brian Lara Cricket had that a lot,
mm.
that old game.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
There was no, I can't remember what game this was now. I don't think it was a PES. I had a demo of a football game on PS1 era, I think. I don't think it was FIFA. I can't think what it would be. But it's going for the same market, right?
Mm.
And they had Lawrenson on commentary.
Yeah.
But you... they weren't so good at balancing the frequency of what commentary had come up, right? So we were just fucking... like, we didn't have much respect for the game because it wasn't that good. So we were just like two-footing each other all the time. But every time you did that, it was just this line from Lawrenson going, somebody call an ambulance. That was an awful tackle. Right. Would it keep happening? Because we just had one game where we were just like destroying at each other like that. We didn't give a shit. So you said it like six times in a row in the space of like 30 seconds and we were just on the floor. We were just crying.
Yeah.
It's just that he really leaned into the voice acting on it. It's so good.
That's the problem when they get the commentator to say something a bit wild as well. It's like, don't, because it will stick out.
It'll just keep coming. That stuck in my head for years, man.
That's really funny. Oh, but then in the newer PES, it's not really that bad, but sometimes when you shoot, the commentator goes, has a pop. Which, again, it's a bit weird, isn't it? So then I ended up making an emote for that.
And when he shouts, when you take a shot and he shouts, opportunity! Why is he shouting opportunities?
It's bad, isn't it? It's really weird because it's like the person who got them to do it maybe translated it. Yeah, right? Yeah. That's how it sounds.
Yeah, because
yeah. You don't shout opportunity ever. But maybe you do in Japanese, I don't know.
I never thought of that. That's what it is, isn't it?
I think
it's
so.
Slightly.
Because a lot of it is wrong. And it's weird because these people literally are commentators.
Yeah.
Professionally.
Well, they didn't go, are you sure that's what you want me to say?
I guess they just do whatever in it for the big pay.
Oh, that's made my head hurt a little bit.
It's like,
if you ever played Oblivion or just, you know, the Elder Scrolls
Oh,
games,
not much, but I'm familiar with it.
Oblivion is really, it's my favourite because it is rough as arseholes. It's big and it's just really, and there's loads of things like that in there.
Loads of little glitches and stuff.
There's literally,
right?
They may have been patched out over time, but there are literally things in it where you'd have a booth reading for a character and they would literally the recording that would play when you talk to a character in the world would be like, I hear that you were served in, well, let me go again, I hear that, and they just forgotten to cut it out or edit it down, literally people saying, oh, let me do that again.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah in the game.
That's excellent.
I'll find it for you and show you that. But and there's like...
That's amazing.
There's really funny things. Like there are beggars in the game, right? And yeah. You go past them. Could you spare me a septum, sir, for a mad crab soup? You know, that kind of hokey shit, right? And then if you go up and give them a quid or whatever it is, they suddenly like stand bolt upright talking to, you know, and like it zooms in. Have you seen that? Like zooms
in.
And their voice, and then you do that and they just go, thank you so much for your kind patron. You know, it's like Thesp guy has done the other line, a completely different bloke. I really appreciate what you've done. And then sits down again. Going, nah, 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 you know,
yeah.
Just like really rough shit like that. I absolutely love it.
Oh, yeah. I kind of wish I played that when it was out because I've seen all of that stuff. There's a game called Fight Night 2004, I think, which I've done the stuff on stream with.
Oh, have you, haven't
you? Yeah. I tried to do a similar Hot Pepsi thing about me being a boxer, right, which I only did for a couple of streams. It's too much work, but I was proud of it. That game had a thing they introduced, because we had it on PS2, and I remember reading about it on the box. It was called an EA Sports Skeleton. Introducing the EA Sports Skeleton, right?
I love this chip.
When you'd knock someone out, their body would just kind of like flop around. Sometimes they'd stay standing and just like be like wriggling. It was such a mess, but it was so funny. Obviously, when they go straight down, that's it. Sorry, the EA Sports Skeleton, no two knockouts are ever the same. That's what it was. And they weren't, to be fair.
Skeleton is such a funny sentence in itself before anything else happens. That's sort of madness of branding, right?
But we used to like cry laughing at some of the knockdowns. because they'd be knocked out and then they're like standing still with like their, you know, their head in the air.
Yeah,
that's worth looking at on YouTube.
Oh shit, no, I'm getting on that. See, that's never coming back, that era.
And sometimes they'd get stuck on the ropes as they're knocked out and like kind of, you know.
Wiggle around. A sports skeleton.
And you could do like a heavyweight versus a, you know, lightweight, whatever.
Oh my God.
But you could be like Muhammad Ali in it.
And would that send them like...
Yeah.
That's good. That's good stuff. You'd
batter them. And it would just look really funny because he's such a giant.
Yeah.
Compared to these little, you know... Yeah. Yeah, it looks really funny.
This isn't going to bring us to any kind of conclusion, but I've written down. Why did I write that? I've written, what influenced your buying decisions as a kid?
Mine?
I've missed something out. I've missed a key word out
my
of that.
My buying decisions. Did you mean games?
Possibly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did, yeah. Otherwise, that's just completely wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask, like, with... But at the end of the book, was it your mates?
Was it my mates? it was...
Asking about games magazines, that law.
Games magazines?
What, yeah.
I didn't buy games magazines. Like, yeah, that's a big assumption to make.
Showed you what...
I had one that had all the Mortal Kombat fatalities for Deadly Alliance? No. Wait. Yes, that was the one where the newer one, where they had a big break and then they released a new one.
Was
Deadly Alliance, where Liu Kang has his neck broken. Liu Kang. They break his neck at the start.
At the start?
Yeah, in the opening little cutscene.
Like out of sequence thing, like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. And then he's back as a zombie and...
Oh shit, yeah. It's a single player thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember, oh God.
I liked it though.
Didn't have the EA Sports skeleton though, did it?
No. Oh my God. Oh, that would be funny if they put that in a fighting game though. Like in a proper, like in one of those, like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, yeah. If they buy the EA Sports skeleton.
For like a ludicrous
sum. Yeah. Used once in 2004.
Yeah, so your Twitch stuff is kind of currently on hold, sort of.
No, I don't know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It would have been better for me to say I'm taking 2 weeks off, but I've been trying just to stream and haven't. Yeah. Then I might still tonight.
Cool.
But do a relaxed thing, or I might get I might just play a game I love, like either Far Cry 4 or Far Cry Blood Dragon.
Okay,
have you played those?
I've not played them, but
Blood Dragon is brilliant and it's very funny.
Yeah,
I'd recommend that.
It's definitely funny, like
honestly, because it's not like, it's not got like silly, it's not that they're making jokes, it's like it's all like a retro
Yeah,
it's like an 80s film.
Yeah,
but it's really silly.
Right, okay.
And it does genuinely have some very good stuff in there, some very funny stuff, and it's just a fun, you know.
I think I'm fairly just brushed it aside as thinking, oh, it's one of those ones that's trying to.
No, I know. Whenever you... I had that... I think when I started playing this, I told someone it's really funny, and they were like, ah, but when games try to be funny...
Yeah.
I was like, no, it's not like that.
Because it's burnt so many times, you just presume it's going to be like the other ones.
Like The Witcher 3 has some comedy moments.
Mm.
You know, they're not
funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it's good. So I might play something like that. But also, apart from that, I'm going to keep doing gigs. I am going on tour around the UK and Ireland, Dublin. And... I think I'm going to be starting a podcast thing soon. A video podcast thing is the plan.
Yeah.
Do you know Joey Page?
No.
He's a very good comedian friend. He did some stuff on Twitch as well. Me and him might be starting a thing. Someone told me that people think the podcast world is saturated, but actually it's not, because there's not enough good stuff for the amount of people that listen.
Yeah.
Because they are massive now. Mm. And there's so many bad ones. Because you hear adverts, right? When you listen to a podcast, you hear trailers and you're like, well, this sounds absolutely useless. In the UK, they've given a lot of podcasts to celebrities. that don't do interviews. And then I've listened to some, and they're not very good at interviewing.
No.
And it sounds very scripted when they're like asking a question.
Yeah.
So what do you know? It's like, well, this, it doesn't make any sense.
They, for example, they wouldn't ask you what your buying decisions were as a kid.
Yeah.
It was wouldn't even.
What are your buying decisions as a child? And is it because of your mates?